And welcome back, everyone, to the Cold War Cast. I am your host, Ryan Llewellyn. This is a podcast where we discuss the history and the pop culture of the Cold War. Before we get into the history, let's talk a little bit about the present day. Things are still pretty crazy out there with the war in Ukraine. I think a ceasefire is on the way very soon, but this has been pretty crazy to watch. From the informational war aspect across, here, just as a spectator across the ocean. Honestly, I don't believe anything that I hear anymore about the war. Just there's been so much bullshit, I think, all around. I don't believe any of the casualty figures that I see. There's a lot of just kind of weird assessments on how the Russians are doing or not doing. And just a lot of weird things I've seen out there. Torture videos on TikTok. There was one, well, it wasn't on TikTok, but just the other day, of Ukrainian soldiers shooting wounded Russian prisoners in the knee. And then there was another video of, and I think this was on TikTok, a famous Russian, I don't know what the guy's deal was. He was Ukrainian, but like lived in Russia or something. MMA fighter that was getting tortured by the Azov battalion guys, I believe. And that was pretty brutal to watch. And then the actual TikTok videos of the Russians giving their POWs, soup and sandwiches or whatever. And I saw one the other day of Ukrainians. They took some dead Russian soldier's phone and called the guy's mother to tell him that, they had killed him or whatever, and kind of laughing at her. I only understood one Russian word, and that was the word suka, which is not a nice thing to call a woman. But this has been just pretty weird, and I don't know what to make of a lot of this thing, and it just... interesting, I guess, from a technological aspect, the way social media and individual soldiers having cell phones in the war has, really added something to this. But anyway, I think there's a lot of people out there that don't know what they're talking about. And I think there's just as many people out there that do know what they're talking about, people that are experts and well-versed in certain fields that, have biases and probably shouldn't be doing a lot of talking. But that's kind of the point of this episode right here today. We're going to talk a little bit about a couple of things that will help you understand information that you'll probably receive, because that's just really got me thinking about this. We're going to talk about the DEFCON system and the Doomsday Clock today. So two separate topics, kind of related together. But, just doing a quick little thing on one might be too short of an episode. So we'll put them both together. I think that'll be good. But what got me thinking about our DEFCON system was, a couple weeks ago, the Russians, they've got a system similar to ours. And they have four different steps of their, missile readiness or whatever. And they went from step four to step three. And a lot of people on our side of the fence here started freaking out about that. That means the Russians are getting ready to launch their nukes. But, I can't tell you the specifics of each step, but with their system, level four was kind of normal conditions where there's going to be basic vigilance that where if they ever get a call, they can quickly go in the action and do what they need to do. But going from step four to step three is basically giving these guys a thump and saying, hey, wake up. It's not necessarily means that it's going to escalate into the war, but it's a formal way to acknowledge that it's more of a possibility as it was that day than it was a week earlier. And then, of course, we have our DEFCON system here, and it doesn't necessarily mean if it goes up a step that it means war. It just means a heightened state of vigilance. And now there's also an account on Twitter, which is a pretty good one, actually, but it's the DEFCON Twitter, and it looks like something official, but it's not. I don't know who runs it, but you know, sometimes they put kind of hyperbolic news links in there. So when people see it and they think it's our actual DEFCON system, you know, posting about, you know, the Russians doing this or that or whatever, that it's a little bit bigger deal than it actually is. So, you know, just keep that in mind, I guess. But in these kind of military situations, we need absolute clarity and standardization with our words so everything can be clearly understood. This is, it's very, very important all up and down the military. There's protocols and procedures that a private would use, and then, well, one's generals would use when it comes time to, you know, upping the game with the DEFCON threat. Now, the DEFCON system that we have now came up when 1959. They had something there earlier that was maybe a little bit more vague, but the system they came up with is going to be more specific. And, you know, like I was saying, the military really relies on having specific terminology and all these things to eliminate any sort of vagueness when the time comes. The, you know, the best example I can give for this is think about on a Navy ship. Some of the things that they would, like the commands that they would give that would be obeyed instantly. There's protocol for these things that everyone already knows. That way, in the midst of battle, everybody knows exactly what they're hearing and what they're supposed to do. So, you know, watch a, you know, Navy movie or something like that, and you'll see that in action. You know, they don't mince their words. They have things set in place and everyone knows exactly what there is. And that's the same thing with our DEFCON system. All right. So yeah, they came up with it in 1959, and the way it works, the DEFCON level can be for the entire United States military, but the way it primarily works is for specific commands and theaters. And what I mean by this is we've got, let's see here. We've got the African Command, Central Command, European Command, Indo-Pacific, Northern Command, which is North America, more or less. Southern Command, which is Latin America, basically, space, and I think Special Operations, something like that. There's a few of these big picture theaters, and within those, there's going to be specific ones, like, say, for instance, in Indo-Pacific, there's going to be the Pacific Fleet, the Marine Forces, Japan, you know, all these different things in there. And the DEFCONs get determined at those levels, basically. Now, a specific military base is going to have its own system that they use, which is mainly going to be, I think, like Alpha, Bravo, Charlie, Delta. And that's for the threat levels at specific bases, which is something a little bit different. Like, let's say they say there could be a terrorist attack at Camp Pendleton, per se. They wouldn't necessarily raise the DEFCON for that. It'd be, you know, go up to threat level Charlie or whatever. So DEFCON levels can be different throughout the American armed forces. So now the DEFCON level itself is something that is technically classified, but it's pretty easy for people that know to figure out where it's at. And when I checked it last night, they said our European forces are on DEFCON level 2. The time I saw before that, it was 3. And I would probably believe 3 over 2, and I'll explain the levels here in a little bit. But our forces in say Latin America and Indo-Pacific are at 4, which is going to be a lower level. And that's happened throughout throughout the course of time. During the Persian Gulf War, for instance, the Central Command, the one that handles the Middle East, they went to a much higher DEFCON level than, say, the forces in Europe. All right, so let's cover the actual levels here real quick. I know people get confused by this sometimes, and for a good reason. But the levels go in descending order. So level 5 is going to be the lowest, and level 1 is going to be the highest. So level 5 is considered normal, basically. Normal conditions. There's nothing particularly worrisome about the situation in the world. And the code word that they use for that is fade out, for whatever reason. So this is just business as usual. And notice that they're not saying it's relaxed, because in these military situations, they're always supposed to have some base level of vigilance at all times and in readiness. So no one's ever going to say, you know, hey, we're chill here. This is relaxed. This is, you know, whatever, because there is always the threat of something, and they do have to be on guard for that. Now, level 4 is going to be increased, and the code word for this is double take. And I think that's a pretty good one, because what happens at level 4 is increased security and vigilance, and with intelligence. Really kicks in right here, and the visualization of a double take is really good for that one. The next level up is level 3, which has the code name Roundhouse, and this is a general increase of readiness. So at this point, they would say that forces should be ready to deploy within 6 hours, and this is mainly for our missile forces and air forces, but the planes should be ready to take off within 15 minutes. So they really kind of had their finger close to the trigger at this point. So there would be a heightened state in the world, a very specific one too, if they go to level 3. It's pretty serious. They haven't really done it all that often. They did it during the Arab-Israeli War, and I think that may have been about it. And of course, now they say that Europe is either in 3 or 2. I think at this point, they would be likely to cancel exercises, maybe, if it required a lot of dedication, I guess, you know, from the troops. If you know, the troops are going to be out doing this, but we could potentially need them to go here at a moment's notice. Yeah, I think that's a good possibility right there. DEFCON 2 means war is imminent, and the code word for that is fast pace. This is the next step from war. And at this point, they are really locking and loading. Everybody's ready to deploy. The planes are ready to take off. And we're just really at the next step from war, waiting for word. DEFCON 1 is actual war. And if we hit DEFCON 1, that means nuclear missiles are either flying, and or they will be. So we go off into a war state there, and from DEFCON 1, they can actually put it in the 2 emergency conditions that, you know, mean 2 different things. Basically, that means like, yep, it's really on, and it's really on for sure. So just to kind of kick it home, to go from defense to offense and action. Now, like I said, we've only been to level 3 once, I believe, and We've been to level two a couple of times where we were right at the brink. One, as you could probably imagine, was the Cuban Missile Crisis. And as I understand it, it wasn't all American forces were at level two, just the actual continental U.S., just the actual continental U.S. was at threat level two, and everybody else, I guess they may have been at three or four. And then, like I said earlier, the Gulf War put CENTCOM into DEFCON 2. So there you have the levels. And, you know, just like I said, the important takeaway from this is that the levels go from the highest being the least threat to the lowest, one being the most threat. And when DEFCON goes up a level, it doesn't necessarily always mean that war is escalating. It's just a way of showing vigilance. Like I said, this information is classified, but not hidden too well, because in a sense, raising the DEFCON level is kind of a show of force. Now, when we heard about the Russians going from step four to three on theirs, like I said, we kind of freaked out a little bit about that, and that maybe gave some people in the United States some pause. So if we go from four to three, they would hear, just think about the other side. They would hear about that too, and, you know, maybe start to get some butterflies in their stomach. So, it is a way of not only getting everybody on the same page with the level of threat out there, it is a way of telegraphing intentions as well too. So just keep that in mind. All right, so the next thing we're going to talk about is the Doomsday Clock. The Doomsday Clock is a real Cold War icon, but it's still around today. It makes headlines sometimes when they put out their annual report, and a lot of times it looks very alarming, and some people get alarmed, and a lot of people groan at the same time too with some of their conclusions, because sometimes it does seem politically biased, and to me, this is just a pet peeve of mine, but obnoxiously misanthropic. What I mean by that is just the idea that, you know, oh, humans are going to destroy everything and everything. I don't know. Just something about that just kind of rubs me the wrong way. I feel the same way about a lot of 50s sci-fi films, even though I like them. Just the attitude. I don't know. Just some just bothers me about that. But, and also sometimes too, people will look at the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists and think that these are guys that kind of ran their course during the Cold War, and they're just trying to be alarmist to stay relevant in the current days, which, you know, we don't necessarily have the same threat of nuclear war, the same level of threat as we did during, say, 1984 or whatever. But, you know, they come out now and talk about climate change or bioterrorism, threats to democracy and these kind of things, and it doesn't seem to pack the same punch as nuclear war did. So, you know, like I said, people sometimes groan a little bit about their conclusions, but to be honest, I actually read their report for this year and the past couple of years, and I came out with a little bit more of an appreciation for them. And it is interesting, and I think from now on, I will give them a little bit more consideration beyond just their headlines. So anyway, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists was a group, or the journal of a group of scientists, that a lot of them worked on the Manhattan Project, and they put this bulletin out back in 1945. But in their 1947 issue, they came up with this idea of the Doomsday Clock. And you can actually look up the cover on the internet for this. It's kind of cool. It's this bright neon orange cover with a clock that's 7 minutes to midnight. And they decided they would pick the clock as a way of showing the reader that once they, how close we are to Armageddon, to absolute destruction with the way we were heading with nuclear atomic weapons. Now, the doomsday clock isn't done in real time. They get together once a year in January, and you know, it's a lot of the top dogs, I guess, in their organization. So it's not just you know, random clowns, I guess. And they come up with their conclusions and decide where the clock is going to be set at. Now, this year, they did it in January, and they had mentioned the potential for a threat in conflict in Ukraine. But, you know, of course, the conflict wasn't doing what it is today. So, you know, these guys are really clenching their teeth and sitting on their hands to get to that doomsday clock right now. But you can go to their website, just Google Bulletin of Atomic Scientists, and they will have their clock on the page and where it's set out now. And we'll talk a little bit about where it's set here in a little bit. So the clock started, like I said, at 7 minutes till midnight. And they just picked this position, 7 minutes till midnight, because it looked cool. And like I'm honest, that's what they said basically, was it looked aesthetically pleasing, and it's a good position to be in because it shows that there's a little bit of time, but also that midnight was rapidly approaching. And over the course of the years, the clock has been moved back and forth based on their assessment of events in the world. They started the clock during some interesting times when things just really started to get interesting back in 1947. And by 1949, they moved the clock up to 3 minutes till midnight. So the Soviets had just gotten the atomic bomb. Things got a little hairier out there. Then by 1953, it was down to 2 minutes till midnight. So if you think about it, we had bigger and badder bombs, just had the Korean War. Things are pretty tense in the Cold War. And it started to reel itself back a little bit. During the Cuban Missile Crisis, that was all resolved in between meetings, so that didn't have a real effect on it. If it did, I'm sure they would have put it to, you know, a minute to midnight or something. But when we look at historically where the clock's been, it's a pretty good barometer for the level of tensions in the Cold War. Now, the 60s were fairly tranquil for the Cold War, But they started to creep up a little bit in the 70s, and the clock reflects this as well, too. When the Soviets invaded Afghanistan, it went forward quite a bit, and it got really close, too, up in the early Reagan years. So 1982, 1983, 1984, I believe we were sitting at either 2 or 3 minutes till midnight. So those were very tense times during the Cold War. But when Gorbachev and Reagan were meeting, and there was that period of détente between the two powers and the SALT treaties and so forth, that it went back a little bit. And then when the Soviet Union fell, and you know, we're all friends again back in the early 90s, 1991, it went to the furthest that it's ever been, which was in 1999, it's 17 minutes. So they were feeling pretty hopeful then. Now, today it is sitting at 90 seconds to midnight. And the reason that things are so tense right now are, well, there's so little time left on the clock between now and back in the promising days of 1991, was part of it, the failure to get climate change under control is what they say. That was a big one. And they cranked it up during the Trump administration, actually, because the brinksmanship with North Korea and his denial of science, I guess, or something like that with the climate change. Now, when they did this, 2 years ago in 2008, or well, 4 years ago now, I'm losing my mind. I admit that, like, when I saw that, I groaned and kind of put it under Trump derangement syndrome, where, you know, people were honestly like, I definitely understand having criticisms of the guy, but it seems like people were kind of losing their mind a little bit with it. And I thought they were part of it too. But in a way, they made a pretty good point about the world hadn't really seen two leaders dick wagging basically with nuclear weapons as Trump and Kim Jong-un were doing at the time, and you know, how that could have easily spiraled out of control. There was a book written about the same time too. It's kind of a famous book about it's written as a report. God, I wish I would have written down the name of it, but it was pretty good. And they basically said the same thing, that Trump and Kim Jong-un kind of spiraled out of control because they're both crazy guys or whatever, and end up launching nukes at each other. But yeah, so they put it at 90 seconds to midnight, saying that catastrophe is very close if we don't change our course or whatever. Now, like I said, they meet once a year, so they're going to meet next January and decide where the doomsday clock is. I think a lot of the situation in the Ukraine is going to be kind of settled-ish, I guess, by that time. That there will be a ceasefire. You know, it's not going to be a conventional war going on at the time. But I'm going to predict that they're going to move it to 45 seconds to midnight. And that's if Putin is still in office, and I think he will be. If he's not, maybe they might leave it where it's at now, but I think that's what they're going to do. But part of the reason I'm talking about the Doomsday Clock today is because, well, for one, like I said, it is a really cool relic of the Cold War. It's just really part and parcel with atomic culture that came out of the era, and you know, it is something that's really worked its way into our popular culture. There's a lot of songs and references to Doomsday. If you say something like, you know, oh, it's 2 minutes to midnight, 3 minutes to midnight, you know, most people know kind of what you're talking to or getting at. So I think it is cool in that regard, but there's a likelihood that, like I said, come January, they could put out another report and say it's, you know, 3 seconds to midnight, or, you know, 10 seconds, whatever, and get everybody worked up. And I want you to kind of understand what it actually is. It's not a, it's not something to take as gospel. You know, these are human beings with their own biases and motivations, and, you know, maybe, you know, they might be feeling a little self-aggrandizing that day and kind of want to make themselves feel important and move more forward than they actually think. But at the same time, too, these are very smart people, and they've done a pretty good job in the past of pegging Cold War tensions to this clock. So it's not something to write off and completely dismiss either. So when they put their report out, you know, maybe just give it a thought or two. Like I said, if anything, it's just a cool relic from the Cold War that still trails on with us today. All right, so I'm going to leave it there here for now. I want to do a couple more shorter episodes like this of topics that are kind of relevant with everything going on in the world. And, you know, maybe just help do my part to spread a little understanding of this thing that's going on in the world that's kind of hard to understand. But that's just all I want to, you know, there's a few topics that I've seen people discuss out there that kind of relate to the Cold War that I don't know, I think need some clarification, at least the best clarification I'm capable of giving. All right, so if you want to get in touch with me, just look me up on Instagram under Cold War Cast, and, you know, I've been posting there, and I will be putting together all my other social media very soon. I've been holding off on that as I kind of pick up a little more momentum with this podcast after the hiatus. So I'm going to be doing Twitter and Gab and all that too here pretty soon. If you want to support this podcast, the best thing you can do right now is go to reddragonherbs.net and check out the tea there. Mother's Day is coming up not too far off. Easter, you know, if you need something to stuff an Easter basket, look at the tea that we have. And I'm always happy to give recommendations as well, too. This is a pretty cool gift. It goes over pretty well. And we have a lot of teas that might be able to help you. So check that out. You know, if you're not fully on board with tea yet, go check us out on Instagram as well, too. Red Dragon Herbs on Instagram. My wife handles that, and she's pretty good with Instagram. So she's really tearing it up over there. And other than that, that's about all I've got for now. So I will talk to you later, and thanks for listening.